You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Science is interesting, and if you don't agree, you can fuck off.
Welcome back to The Wire on 95BFM. Now today on Dear Science, AUT Professor of Chemistry Alan Blackman is back for another week before Steve Poynting returns in February. So today on the show, we're starting off with the story of medical quackery. Can you tell me a bit about this?
Oh, this is a really, really sad story. Okay, so there was a lady by the name of Naima Halda Muhammad who unfortunately got breast cancer in 2009. She was a captain in the British Army. She'd been through Sandhurst, officer training, all that sort of stuff. And so she was diagnosed with breast cancer in 2009. She underwent what some might call conventional therapy. The cancer disappeared. It recurred in 2012, and she was told it was terminal. So as one probably would do in that case, she sought perhaps alternative remedies. So she went on the internet and discovered a guy by the name of Robert O. Young, who was an advocate, or is an advocate still sadly, of this thing called the alkaline diet, which essentially in a nutshell says that the pH of your blood is alkaline. It's around about 7.4, which makes it basic or alkaline, mm-hmm. Depending on which terminology you use. And so he basically says that because your blood is alkaline, therefore you shouldn't eat any acid. So all of these foods that are supposedly acidic, like meat, like sugar, like alcohol, all of this stuff, you just eliminate that from your diet. Only eat so-called alkaline foods, like all your green vegetables and everything and all that sort of stuff, which, you know, that's not a terrible thing to do.
Yeah.
But he maintains that all disease comes from acidity. And so she got onto him through the internet, and as you would if you were in a terminal situation, I guess, you would be willing to try anything.
Yeah.
The treatment that she got, or the treatment in inverted commas that she got from him, cost around about 100,000 New Zealand dollars for around about 3 months, and consisted primarily of infusions of sodium bicarbonate, intravenous infusions of sodium bicarbonate.
What?
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so he's got this. This guy has written books, all having the title something like The pH Miracle, and I think something like The Return of the pH Miracle, like that. He's sold 4 million copies of these things. Okay, this is really popular stuff. To believe that it can cure cancer, or for it's just so wrong. So this poor lady, you know, the family got the life savings and all of that stuff to pay. She goes and lives at this ranch for 3 months or so, and sadly, no surprises, she didn't get better and she ended up dying.
Oh man,
which is just utterly appalling. It's absolutely dreadful. Okay, what's wrong with this alkaline theory? Well, number one, everything you eat goes into your stomach. The pH of your stomach's about 1.5. It's very acidic. So before you get to your intestines, where all of your food is absorbed into your body, all your nutrients, etc., it's going through a big acidic pot called your stomach. Mm. So it's utter, can I say crap?
Yeah,
good.
Go for
I'll say it. It's crap with a capital C. It really is. And this guy should know better. So he essentially touts himself as being a doctor, but it's been shown that he doesn't have a doctoral degree.
I read that.
From anywhere that's recognised.
Didn't he get it in the mail? He got his PhD in the mail?
Yeah. As you sadly can do. He went from a BSc to a PhD in 8 months, which, you know, that's pretty good. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
So it's just a really, really sad situation, and sadly there are all too many people out on the internet who are quite willing to take advantage of people who are in this situation, and really there should be a special place in hell reserved for these people. They are just evil. They're evil people who are taking advantage of people who are in a terminal situation and who really would be willing to try anything. Okay, so this I found this on the BBC website, and this formed the basis of a documentary which is called Clean Eating: The Dirty Truth, which just showed last week in Britain on BBC Two. And you can get it on YouTube. It's, if you do the search for that on YouTube, you'll find it. Mm-hmm. So I watched it last night. And it's basically a medical doctor going through and sort of looking at these sort of quack people. And it's a very, very good watch. But having found that on the BBC website, I was then looking at the Herald yesterday, and really, really unfortunately, there's another story in the Herald of this lady in Britain who, mother of four, 36 years old, she's found a lump in her breast, and rather than undergo chemotherapy, so she's been offered free on the NHS either a mastectomy or a lumpectomy and radiation treatment, but she's saying, no, I'm not going to do that. I am going to have an alkaline-based vegan diet, and that's going to cure me. She says, quote unquote, I've done a lot of scientific research into it. I'm 100% sure my cancer is emotional. I believe if I had a mastectomy, I'd be dead within 10 years. I've seen people go through chemotherapy and be very ill as a result. Others having mastectomies still not surviving. So she's absolutely convinced that all she's got to do is to follow this alkaline-based diet and she's going to get better. Now, surprise, surprise, Sarah also needs £30,000 to fund her natural treatment. She needs to get vitamin C drips, supplements, a water distiller, thermo imaging to check tumor shrinkage, and hormone testing reports, okay?
Hmm.
So there's some bastard, I'll say there, who is, you know, charging $30,000 for all of that, £30,000, sorry, for all of this sort of stuff. It's just wrong.
And just exploiting basically people's desperation.
It's, yeah, absolutely. It's exploitation to the nth degree. There is no such thing as alternative medicine. There is medicine full stop.
Right.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's it. It either works or it doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
And if it doesn't work, it's not alternative medicine. It's just crap.
Right.
So, yeah, this sort of thing really, really gets my goat. And sadly, it just seems to be proliferating more and more given the freely available nature of stuff on the internet. You just
totally
get quacks out there who are willing to take advantage of people, and it's just so wrong. So, you know, I could go on at this for a long time. But
It just kind of seems to pop up again and again.
Yes,
I remember recently, I guess maybe it was a couple of years ago now, there was an Australian woman. I don't know if you remember, she was like very big on Instagram, like had a very strong social media presence and was advocating a vegan diet as a cure for cancer and, you know, told everybody that it cured her cancer, and it was amazing. And she wrote these books and everything, and then it turned out she actually didn't even have cancer in the end.
Even have it. Yes.
And was like she gave all these families so much hope and like created this almost false community, and it's just like so disturbing.
Oh god. And again, in New Zealand, I don't know, it might have been 10-15 years ago, there was a little kid who had terminal cancer, and his parents were not going to give him treatment, and I thought they went through all the courts and stuff, and they were going to give him forcible treatment, so they just as much as you can kidnap your kid, I think they just sort of took him away somewhere. And you know, it was this again quack who had this fraudulent quantum device or something like that, and was going to treat the kid like this, and of course he ended up passing away. And it's tragic. It's utterly tragic.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like, speaking from a position of recently losing a close family member to cancer, I know exactly that feeling of being like, any solution, can we do anything, you know? And like, that's just like the worst possible thing to like exploit.
It's just plain evil. And, you know, these people. So this guy, Dr. Robert Young, is now up for 3 years jail because for practicing medicine without a license.
Yeah.
So, you know, all power to the courts over there, hopefully.
Totally.
Yeah.
So next up, something a little bit, hopefully we'll give the listeners a little bit less to despair about, actually more exciting perhaps, that astronomers have discovered hotter temperatures than were thought possible. Yeah. Tell me about this.
Well, we've got two stories about temperatures today. We've got the coldest possible temperature and we've got the hottest possible temperature. So it probably makes sense to talk about what temperature is to begin with.
Yep, go for it. tell us.
So temperature is basically a manifestation of motion. That's all it is. So when things are moving, they have a particular temperature. The faster they move, essentially, the hotter the temperature. That's it in a nutshell, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
So when you stop movement, you have zero temperature. So that's the coldest possible temperature that you can have. Now, we might think that a temperature of 0 degrees is cold because water freezes. That's what we use as the basis of our temperature scale, is the freezing of water. But in fact, as everybody knows, you can get colder temperatures than that, especially if you're down in the South Island up in the hills at the moment, because they're having a rubbish summer.
Yeah.
So you can get negative temperatures, of course. And then the question becomes, well, is there a coldest temperature that you can get? And the answer is yes, there is. And that coldest temperature that you can get is negative 273.15 degrees Celsius.
Wow.
Okay. And the reason that's the coldest temperature is that all motion of atoms and molecules stops at that particular temperature.
Okay.
Okay, so that's the coldest temperature. And we call that zero Kelvin. That's another temperature scale that we can use, is the Kelvin scale. And that's the zero of temperature where all motion stops. Now, so potentially we should be able to get to zero Kelvin, but we can't, because there's a thing called the third law of thermodynamics, which says that you cannot get to zero Kelvin. Okay, you can't have no motion. That's a fundamental law of physics, dare I say it, and is encompassed in a thing called the Heisenberg uncertainty principle, which we're certainly not going to go into here.
Sounds very complicated.
But you can't get to zero, but you can get really, 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 really close to zero. So researchers over in Colorado at the National Institute of Standards have just recorded the coldest known temperature. And that temperature is 0.00036 Kelvin. Okay, so that's
Really close.
That's really close. That's negative 273.14964 degrees Celsius. Okay, so that's as close to absolute zero as anybody has got before. And you might think, okay, whoop-de-doo, so this is just some bloody academic palaver. But it's not really, because cold temperatures are of interest because the next generation of computers that we're going to use are going to be things called quantum computers. And the current computers that we use rely on a binary language. So you're either a zero or a one, basically. Yeah. That's the way that all computers work. However, there are these states of matter called qubits, which can be both simultaneously zero and one at the same time. Okay. And these are going to be the foundation of new computers that are going to be infinitely faster than what we've got at the moment. But they're only going to operate at very, very cold temperatures, because you can't have any of these thermal motion. You can't have these things moving very much. Otherwise, they just sort of fall apart, these qubit things. So it's of interest to get as cold as we possibly can in order to investigate these new computers. So it's not just some academic nonsense. It really is going to have real-world applications. So that's why a lot of people are putting a lot of money into this sort of stuff.
Cool. That's really
literally
awesome.
Yes.
Yeah, cool. Literally cool. So talk to me about the timeline for this. So they've discovered this. How is this going to take it, come into effect in terms of technological development, do you think?
That's a really good question. A lot of people are trying to answer that question right at the moment. So, any guess is a guess. Maybe, you know, the next 5 years. I believe there's an example of an operating quantum computer reported, I think, last year or so, but they're still not quite sure whether it's actually doing what it says it's meant to be doing. So, but as I say, you know, whoever makes the big breakthrough on this, they're going to make gazillions. So a lot of people are putting a lot of money
absolutely
into this sort of stuff.
So
that's the coldest temperature.
And then on the other end of the spectrum.
Indeed, and in the same week as well. Who'd have thunk it? So astronomers have been busy looking at a quasar. And a quasar is a thing called, is an abbreviation for quasi-stellar object. So these were extraordinarily bright things in the sky that gave out a truckload of radiation, and people sort of didn't really know what they were sort of way back in the 50s, 60s or so, I think. And so, for example, these quasars put out more luminosity, or they're more luminous than the entire Milky Way, and they're about the size of the solar system. So it just boggles the mind, you know, all the millions and millions and millions of stars in the Milky Way, and these things put out more light than those. So quite amazing. But what has been done recently is that astronomers have been getting a really, really good view of these very, very, very distant quasars, and the way that they do that is they use an orbiting Russian radio telescope, which is out around the orbit of the moon, plus an Earth-based telescope as well, and essentially sort of merge the images and everything and get a really good view of these things. And apparently it's equivalent to a golf ball on the moon, so being able to see a golf ball on the moon, which is pretty impressive. And anyway, the guts of it is that as a result of this, they found that these things are putting out way more radiation than was thought, and using some calculations, they've estimated that this particular quasar has got a temperature of around about 40 million degrees Celsius. Sorry, not 40 million, 40 trillion. Sorry.
Even
more wow. Yes, yes. So current theory said that the maximum possible temperature you should be able to get, and remember, temperature is all about motion.
Mm-hmm,
that's,
mm-hmm.
That's what's leading to these things, is around about 1 trillion degrees Celsius. So they're way, way higher. So the question then becomes why. So people are going to have to rethink their theory. So for comparison on this, the surface of the sun is around about 5,500 degrees Celsius. And the middle of the sun is around about 15 million degrees Celsius. So we're talking...
way more than that.
Oh, yes, 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 yes. Yeah, yeah, we're talking millions and millions more, millions and millions higher temperature than that. So, you know, orders of magnitude, which is quite remarkable. So people are going to have to look at the theories and...
reassess.
Yeah, and basically reassess. So, you know, it's a big scientific discovery, as astronomers seem always to do, because there's a vast amount to study out there. And
absolutely.
With the better and better equipment that you get, the more you're able to see... et cetera, et cetera. So
it's kind of, they've discovered that these particles actually move faster than anyone could have thought? Is that kind of...
Well, that's a really good question, because at the middle of a quasar is a black hole, and really people aren't sure what actually happens to matter in a black hole, because black holes supposedly eats matter. Supposedly once matter gets in, then it just can't get out. Even light, once light goes into a black hole, it can't get out because of the enormous gravitational field in there. So whatever process is going on there, and we probably don't really appreciate or understand that exactly yet, it's generating enormous, enormous temperatures. So things that we just can't comprehend, basically.
Right.
So, you know, people get back to the drawing board and reassess their theories and see what they can come up with.
So is this kind of similar to the one last week where it's kind of changing the rules, breaking the rules?
Yes, indeed. Yeah, yeah, that'd be a similar sort of thing. So, and that's the beauty of science, is that it's ever changing.
Mm-hmm.
We only know what we know today, and tomorrow it could be entirely different.
Totally. It's nothing is like this fixed,
fixed
unchangeable rule that this is just the extent to what we know.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
For sure. Important distinction to make. awesome. Well, thank you for joining us again this week.
Not a problem.
And you'll be back again for one more week next week before Steve gets back.
Okay.
Awesome.
Look,
we will see you then, Alan.
Okay, cool. Thanks. See ya.
That was Dear Science.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.